Welcome to my Blog Talk radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader. I'm a coach, singer, songwriter, artist, and the author of the book, The Art of Living a Life You Love. I am delighted to have my husband, Dudley Denader, back as my guest. During the show today, we'll be talking about his musical journey, what it means to live your music, and you'll get to hear three of his songs during the show. Welcome, Dudley.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning to you, too.
Good afternoon, Margaret. I should say.
Yeah, actually, it's true. It's noon now. Well, I am excited to have you tell some stories about your musical journey because there are so many great stories that you tell us over the years, and Xander and I love hearing them. And we're also curious what stories you'll tell today that we haven't even heard before, because you always do that. It's add in things that we've never heard before.
Well, I just hope that this is of interest to anyone besides the family, but it has been an interesting trip. It has been really a lot of fun, and my life in general has been one of happiness and love and togetherness and family, and I really have to thank you and my parents for bringing me up in such a manner, and my friends and the rest of the extended family that really make me happy. So that being said, let's get down to business. I started actually singing before I played an instrument, and my parents realized that I had a voice when I started singing with all the carolers at Christmas, because I loved Christmas carols. And I don't know, it seems almost like after you've been a young child and you've listened to this music day after day after day as you grow up, you mm-hmm. seem to already have all the lyrics and the melodies in your mind's eye. But that was one of my first recollections, is singing with the carolers at Christmas with my family. And I also was part of the church at Christ Church, where we went to pray to be, what do you say it, where we practiced our religion, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But I was part of the choir at that point in time, and I actually was singled out by the choir director, who realized I was singing in a soprano voice at that time, which is really unusual, but I was only six.
Mm-hmm.
And he isolated me out and actually had me sing a solo with the choir. I think that happened at least once, maybe twice or three times. But
that must have been exciting.
I remember being in the church and looking out over this sea of people, and then the church is a gorgeous Gothic cathedral style, you know, with the real high ceilings and all
mm-hmm.
the accoutrement that went with it. So, I mean, it was really something. But that led on to, you know, singing with my family and other years of singing Christmas carols and so on and so forth. And in 1957, I was given what is called a campership to a camp in Montana called Lost Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I first, well, I had known both John Lyles and Kirk Falvey because we went to middle school together. Actually, it was elementary school at that point in time. But we went to the same camp, and it became really an enjoyable thing to play ukuleles. So we all had taken a ukulele that we had gotten, or in my case, my mom had gotten a ukulele from a friend of hers that had traveled back from Hawaii, and the ukulele was a traditional, beautiful Hawaiian ukulele, but it had a big crack right down the middle of it, because apparently the humidity didn't really vie with the instrument when it came back to Michigan. So anyway, I took some gauze and some wood glue, and I fixed it and made sure that it played, and then I played with the ukulele band. And for a couple years, we were at Lost Trail Camp, and that's where the ukulele band first came in.
Hmm.
And then in 1959, I was at Bloomfield Hills Middle School, And this was the first time I'd ever played in front of people. I mean, a large assembly of people, because they had an assembly, and for some reason I was singled out and asked to play. Apparently I had been vocal about it, or I don't even really remember how, but I had a tenor guitar, a four-string guitar, and I played with George Sass on drums and John Lyles on a six-string guitar. And we played the song Sandy for a girl that I had a crush on named Sandy at the time. That was an interesting thing, and it was well received. I was just kind of blown away. I didn't think I really did that well, but everybody seemed to love it. So it started my musical career in terms of my schoolmates. And in 1961 through 1967, I started the Roadrunners band along with Kirk Fowley and John Lyles. John Lyles and I really were the key to the band, and we brought Kirk on, who was a trumpet player in the band in high school, or in it was a middle school at that point in time, very talented guy who elected to pick up the bass and learn how to play it so he could play in the band. And then we added Dave Carrick on drums, and we were the Roadrunners, and we played for all sorts of school events and private parties and all the place. It was really a lot of fun, well received by everyone, just had a ball. So then,
sound like a lot of fun.
We got into trouble. I mean, you know, I can tell you stories about all sorts of things that happened with that. A little drunkenness here and there and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, we had a really fun time. And the three of us in particular, including Dave, got along really well as a foursome. I mean, we enjoyed each other. When we weren't playing music, we hung out together. So it was really kind of cool. 1965 through 1969, I attended the University of Colorado, and I played with a few bands there. I actually played bass on one with one band. And in one evening when I was at the fraternity, I was a member of the Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity at the time, there was a guy that I met who I can't remember the name of, and he and I sat down, and he told me this story about the song that he had really wanted to get out, so to speak. And so he started playing it, and I started figuring out what he was doing, and he added in other parts. I added a guitar part. I added in some lyrics and stuff like this, and this was the first song that I had written along with him called Come Some Other Morning. And then the other thing that I had done when I was at the University of Colorado is I decided in my second year that I really wanted a quality 12-string guitar. I wanted to learn how to play fingerstyle, and I figured that was the best guitar to probably use for a fingerstyle guitar. So I actually called this place that we had gone to when I was in the band. We had gone to New York to purchase instruments and amplifiers, which is another story that is unbelievable, but get into that at some other time. But that was also the time that I'd wanted this guitar. So I called Manny's in New York from Colorado, and I talked to Manny himself, and he had remembered who I was, which is weird, but we were kind of an unusual group at the time, so it wasn't that unusual. And I asked him about 12-string guitars, and he said, I have this one guitar. It's been in the window for a few years, so it's darkened the front of it a little bit. He said, because it was a bright white guitar to begin with, as most acoustic guitars are, but it had dulled out into kind of an orangey, beautiful gold color. So he showed me a picture of it, and I asked him what he wanted, and he wanted the outrageous price of $600 for it.
Wow, that's a
lot
back
then. Pardon?
That was a lot of money back then.
Oh, that was a ton, especially for a student.
Yeah.
But I managed to save up my nickels and dimes, and I bought the guitar, and he shipped it out to me, and I started learning how to play fingerstyle, and that's when I first started writing the song Waterfall. That was the beginning of that particular fingerstyle journey.
Wow. That song is such a beautiful song, and I remember it hearing it so many times when I first met you. And it's still unbelievable to Xander and me both, and I'm sure to other people when you play it, because your fingers just are flying all over the place, and it's definitely...
Well, you have to keep playing it in order to be able to remember how to play it. Are you going to play the song, or are we going to keep
playing it? Yeah, I was leading into that I have the song queued up here, and I just have to find it on my list. It's down under W for Waterfall. And it's about 3.5 minutes long, so it'll give everybody, including you, a break where we can think about it and just enjoy the song. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's a nice little journey, musical journey, and I started it when I was in college and came up with the first part, and then I just kept adding parts as I went along. But I love that song, and I like to play it on the acoustic guitar with just my fingers and instead of the 12 string, just the 6 string. Anyway, mm-hmm. But moving straight along, in 1970. I was in L.A., and it was when I first met Glenn Collins, who was the lead guitarist for the groups that I'd played with following that time. Mm-hmm. He was really a spectacular guitarist. He was very fast, and very precise in his guitar work, and it inspired me and showed me a lot of exercises. And we played a lot of Allman Brothers double leads together just as exercise and played some songs like that. But we played at the Whiskey A Go-Go in a group that I can't remember the name of, Marina Del Rey, and other locations in Southern California. I also played as a single act. I had a manager at the time also that I got named Bob Max Waxman, who was the son of a very famous film editor at the time. He was the nephew in any case. So he got me an interview with Bell Records, and I played that for whomever was there. I don't remember his name, but it was one of the heads of Bell Records, an A&R guy. And I played Come Some Other Morning for him, and he really wanted the song, but he didn't want me. He didn't want to sign me. He just wanted to sign the song. They had just signed Melanie the year before, and Hall & Oates that year. So it was not a good time for me, who was of the same ilk, to try and get involved with that record company. But nonetheless, that's what had happened. So I didn't take the offer to sell the song, and I soon lost my manager, Bob Waxman. And he had given me a huge amplifier to play with the group, a big Sun amp that had two speaker cabinets each with six 12-inch speakers in each cabinet. And then
wow,
this huge 200-watt head, and it would just blow everything else out of the water. But it was wonderful for the 12-string. When you plug that thing up and put it on either side of the band, it filled this place with sound. It was incredible. Wow. Anyway, I sold that amp to go to buy a ticket to Europe, which in 1971, that's what I did. My good friend Frank Schutz, I had played with here and there, and he had also talked about going to Europe and playing as a busker, you know, just playing in the streets, and how much fun he thought that would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the point where I talked to him, and he was going to go to Europe, and I thought, oh, so that's when I sold the amp, and I got the airfare to go to Europe with him. And we ended up touring all over the place with he and another man named Mark Carpenter in a Volkswagen bus. And we played in London, Paris, Innsbruck, Saint-Tropez. We spent a long time in Saint-Tropez, Barcelona, Sitges, Lyon, Amsterdam. And the interesting thing was that after I stayed in Saint-Tropez for a while, I was noticed by the daughter of an A&R guy from RCA Records. And he actually got her, after I had been playing in the streets in the back of Saint-Tropez, to bring me to their yacht. On the back fantail, he asked me to play for his Labor Day party. And I thought, oh, this is cool. And then he said, I will pay you $500. And then he gave me a couple $100 just as expenses. And I went, holy shit, this is a real thing. And he gave me his business card and everything with RCA on it. And I was blown away at the time. And we wanted to continue to tour all over around Europe, so we didn't stay in Saint-Tropez. We ended up going to a number of other different places. But I had to make it back in time to play that party, which was absolutely unbelievable. To say a villa was of this ilk, I mean, you came into this English Tudor-style house that just went on forever, big porte cochere in the front, and then in the back, just rolling lawns that just went off damn near as far as the eye could see. And then beyond that were the vineyards that all surrounded the property. And down maybe a few hundred yards, there was a pool. It was surrounded by palm trees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the place was just jaw-dropping. It was unbelievable. But in any case, played that and came back and attempted to get in touch with this same man, got the $500 and everything else, and I could never get through his firewall, so I never did make it. I was told by my friends that I should just go camp out at the RCA headquarters and wait till he saw me, which I probably should have done, but I didn't. So I let that go.
Yeah.
So in any case, that was at that point in time. Then I got back to the States, and I was living with a young lady named Patty Towns, and we moved to Fairfax in Marin County in 1972. It was either the end of 71 or the end of 72. And eventually, I had, you know, continued to play just acoustically and think about songs and stuff like that, but I was kind of busy in a new place and so on. And then I noticed that the guys that I had played with in Los Angeles, Glenn Collins, and then also the bass player Steve Valverde, had moved north to play up in the Bay Area, and they ended up playing with me in a new group that we called Ambrose, which was named after the turn-of-the-century macabre writer Ambrose Bierce.
Wow.
And we played all over Marin at the Lion's Share, at Zach's down in Sausalito, and Ted's over near the Hub in Marin, and on Clement Street, a number of clubs in Clement Street, and actually the Clement Mixer was our home club. So whenever we wanted to play, we could go over and play at the Clement Mixer, and they always just welcomed us in, and it was a great time. It was
sounds like it was fun, yeah.
Really was. And then in 1972 to 1974, I toured in the Pacific Northwest by this with this same band. It was booked by an agent out of Head First, which is out of Reno, Nevada. And we played, Reno, Mammoth Mountain, Carson City, Twin Falls, Boise, Pocatello, Idaho Falls, and up in California at Weed, Bandoria. That was for the after party for a high school graduation. It was really cool. Anyway, Bend, Oregon, Eugene, and Salem, and then in Mountain Home, Washington, which was really an unusual thing. But we were playing 5 nights to 6 nights a week, 4 sets a night. And I'll tell you, if you sing that long, you develop a voice or you end up with a scratchy nothing. So I ended up with a voice on account of that. 1972 to 1974, during the time I was touring, I also lived in Fairfax. I bought a small house up on Scenic Drive in Fairfax. Wrote more songs, Lost in Space, Found in Time, Gasoline, Nothing But Change, Pass It By, and The Way It Goes. These were all songs that I figured out and had played on the deck that was next to the thing that had this gorgeous view looking down through the mountains all the way across through San Anselmo, San Rafael, through the bay and over to the East Bay. It was just an incredible. And the backside of Mount Tam was in the westerly direction. So it was a gorgeous place to write.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, and I did that, at that point in time, the band played in Marin from time to time. And one of the places we played just on a quickly and not, you know, on any regularity, but we did from time to time, was a Sleeping Lady in Fairfax. And we were playing Lost in Space, Found in Time, and I saw the door to the cafe open at the far end, and who walks in but Van Morrison. And he's lived in Fairfax for a while. His parents moved there, and then he decided he was going to move there. So, and he stopped and listened to the entire song, and then when it was done, he walked up to me and said, "You should record that." And then he turned around and walked away. Walked out the door and left. And everybody in the place, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, they were all looking at me, looking at him, looking at the trance, you know, as he walked out. And they all had their chins on the floor. I mean, they were like wide-eyed, just like, what? It was cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
1974, I purchased a derelict houseboat in Sausalito. It was called the Roller Coaster, and it was a combination of all sorts of bent plywood and plexiglass, and it didn't look like it would last through a large windstorm. I ended up tearing off most of the extraneous parts and put on a new roof and put in new electricity and sold it into another slip. And a fair amount of time went by. In 1981, I poured a new barge and built a new houseboat in 1982. That was 3 stories, 1,700 square feet, and that's we still own today. Actually, we rent it out to
Yellow Ferry Harbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met you in the beginning of '79, so that was just when I got to see the old houseboat, and wow,
right,
huge
yeah,
difference between
yeah.
the old one and the new one. We have to continue on those. We'll have to maybe do another show sometime where we talk about details about our life, because we've had so many fun times. But yeah, anyway, so we got married in 82 and moved into the houseboat. And then,
right, and at that point in time, I gave up performing music. I still played because I didn't want to make you jealous, and I knew that you were jealous when you saw the way other women looked at me when I was playing. It was not a fun thing, and so I continued to play, and I, at that point in time, had purchased a Les Paul from the Guitar Center, and so I used that for an electric six-string. In 2002, Margot encouraged me, you encouraged me, to record my songs, as I had been playing a number of these songs just on the 12-string and on the electric and so on, and she suggested a Learning Annex class given by an A&R producer from Los Angeles. And I submitted a cassette with rough songs. I think there was a half dozen of them on that cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And I waited and waited for a response from this guy, and he said he would give a response no matter what. And 3 weeks later, he got in touch with me, and he told me, he said, I apologize for this. I had stuck it in my car, and I forgot it was there, because that's the only place I have a cassette player in my car. So he encouraged me to play a number of the songs that I had put on that rough cassette player.
Mm-hmm.
Cassette tape. So that was really when things started to heat up, and Xander started to get interested. I remember I was out on the deck one time, and I was just playing, I think it was probably Waterfall or something like it, where I was in a trance. I had my eyes closed. I didn't even know anyone was there. I was just playing away. And I opened my eyes, and there's my son about 2 feet away from my face, just looking at me intently. And the only words out of his face were, I want to play music. So he started playing piano and then added guitar after a couple of years. He studied classical piano for a couple of years and then added guitar and plays bass and drums now as well. In 2003,
yeah.
I met your longtime friend Robert Berry, and that was really the start of my recording. He's the owner of Soundtech Studios in Campbell, and we really hit it off. And he didn't really want me to come down. He said, it's too far, and there's other studios up there, and I can do it there. But I'd always felt like I never felt comfortable in a recording studio. I always felt like I was on stage, but in front of the entire world. I just never really had a chance to be comfortable. Well, this man made me feel comfortable for the first time in a studio. So that was when we started the first album, Holiday on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a wonderful experience working that through over a period of years. In 2007, we finally completed Holiday on Earth and had it mastered by George Horn of Fantasy Studios in Berkeley. And then we held a release party at Rafter's Grill and Tap in San Rafael in the fall of 2007. And I played with Xander at that point in time, and we just plugged in through their PA and played electric guitars and stuff. And it was really a lot of fun. And a number of old friends and new friends and some of his friends from school, and the place was fairly fun.
Some of my Toastmasters friends were there too, yeah.
Yeah. It was really a lot of fun. We also played Marin Steak and Spirits Company, which was at the
Sheraton
Four Points in San Rafael.
Yeah.
And we played there on Friday and Saturday nights, played four sets a night, I think, for the month of November, I believe that was, in 2007.
Yeah.
And then in 2008, I continued working on new songs with Xander. And that was the first time I had ever really worked with someone else to write a song. I mean, you and I have written songs together, but they've usually been kind of independent of each other. You'd have an idea here, I'd have an idea there. But Xander and I would sit opposite each other and toss ideas back and forth and argue about it and resolve the issue and then end up with a working song. I mean, it was incredible. And we did this for a number of songs, and it really did work. And
yeah,
it was really fun watching
you guys do that.
Yeah, as my writing partner, and now we're at a point where we both got systems where we can record on computers and exchange files. So we're now at this point.
You're jumping ahead, though. We need to get back to 2008. So 2008 also was when Xander graduated from high school and when we started looking at colleges that he was going to go to. And
right.
During that time, we were recording the songs for D2, the Donator's second album at
right.
Soundtech with Robert. And I remember looking for the colleges and listening to the songs that were going to be on the second album before it was an album. And one of them that really reminds me of that time, they all do, but one of them that does is Dodging Bullets, which I have queued up to play. And do you want to tell us anything about Dodging Bullets before I play it, or what do you want to do?
Well, Dodging Bullets was wonderful. Unfortunately, it's not one of the songs that I really wrote with Xander. He helped me, and he added some things in after it, but it was I remember I was sitting and I wasn't sitting, I was standing in the kitchen. You were preparing dinner. I was on the other side of the little island, and I had a pad in front of me, and I got this idea for this song because I thought, Dodging Bullets, what a great idea for a song. I mean, you know, I got into mind the whole thing of Matrix when you see Keanu Reeves, you know, jumping up in the air and all the bullets are going all around him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's what kind of inspired that song. But that was pretty much where it came from. All in one fell swoop, the lyrics were written while I was watching you cook dinner. I just wrote it all down, and then Xander and I helped figure out how it was all going to work together and what the melody line was going to be and so on and so forth. So why don't you go ahead and
play it, and then we can get back to talking about your journey. All right, so this one's about 3.5 minutes long also. It's called Dodging Bullets by Deadly Donator, the Donators.
We'll be right back.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's the thing I really like about it is that it's hard rock and roll, and it is a part of me that really likes to express hard rock and roll. Hold on for a second. Go ahead and mention something else and mute me for just a second.
Okay. Well, anyway, I just wanted to say that album is so much fun to listen to. Actually, both albums, and we had so much fun recording every single song with Robert Barry. I went to every one of the sessions, and also because of Dudley and Xander playing together in 2007, that's what inspired me to take singing lessons. So it's been a fun musical journey that we've been on, and
truly.
I am so thankful for all of the things that you've inspired me to do and all the fun that you've added into my life, including having Xander. I mean, that was huge. We had taken a big break from music, but, you know, we had so much fun while he was growing up as well. And
yeah, we really did. And it's just, I don't know, it all felt correct at the time, you know. Nothing ever felt forced, but nothing ever felt like it was left out at the same time. And showing, you know, watching you get interested in music was, it was like watching Xander getting interested in music the very first time when he was leering over me when I was playing the guitar. And I could see it in his eyes. It was just kind of like, I want this. I want to have this in my life. And it was one of the things that, to see both of you have the same reaction to music and want to figure out how to play, want to understand how to sing, want to really be able to follow music and listen to all the different musical parts. It's one of the things that I think a regular person that isn't a musician is kind of mystified by music because of the fact that they haven't had an ear that's trained well enough to be able to discern different instruments and different vocals. But once you start really thinking about it, and once you start practicing it and getting your own voice trained and playing an instrument, then you start to understand a lot of those different things, and you can hear those different parts in other music. I always enjoyed classical music as a kid because it was played in my house. My mom and my dad played it continually. And so that's what I grew up with. And I had never really appreciated it until I got to be a musician myself. And then I can listen to a classical piece now and just go, oh, I can understand where the writing came from, how they modified these sections to be like the other sections and yet not, and how it all works together. So the education of just being into music, I think, is the most important aspect about the entire thing. And this is something that I've carried ever since I was a kid. I've always just loved the love of music. Now, when I was playing professionally, it got to the point, I mean, when you're on the road and you're traveling in a pair of Volkswagen buses and you're jammed in with these three other guys, and at one point in time, Yvonne was singing with us as well, so there was five of us. I mean, it just night after night, day after day, week after week, you play 5 to 6 nights a week, then you travel to a new city, you get set up, and you play it all over again, and you play 4 sets a night. And, you know, this is 4 45-minute sets, and that's a lot of time. So
a lot of practice.
Yeah, it's a lot of practice, and it, as I said, or I meant to say earlier, is that's, I think, really where I developed my voice, was because of the fact that I had to sing every night, 5 nights a week, 6 nights sometimes. And just had to do it all night long. I mean, and it really was an amazing journey, but it also really helped me develop the voice that I have today, which is strong. Got good.
It is.
Good lungs.
Yeah, it's true. You know what you were saying about the more you study around music a lot, and also starting to learn about it, that you start noticing the different parts. But one of the things that helped me get into noticing the different parts is it was so much fun going to the recording studio ever since 2003 in November. You realize it's going to be November this year. It's going to be 20 years since we started recording songs with Robert Barry at Soundtech. Anyway,
we should
take
him a bottle of champagne and sit down and just get pie-eyed.
Yeah. Well, take him out to dinner, too, he and Rebecca.
Yeah.
But watching each track, he would record, he still does, records each track separately and then mixes them together. So I would get a chance to hear each one of the instruments and each one of the vocals separately. And
right. That
has been such a great learning experience. Anyway, we've got 18 minutes left of the show, and I think, did you mention some of the names of the songs that were on D2? I don't think you did yet. And
no, that's...
We can go on from there.
Right. But in 2008, we released the second album, which was called D2, the Donator's second album, for want of a better term. And we're going to call the new album that we've got most everything done, D3 3D. So that's going to be it's a palindrome. But we're trying to keep the D's and the, D2.
All right, well, let's get back to D2.
But in any case, the second album was recorded and engineered by Robert Barry, obviously, of Soundtech Studios. And as you were saying, he does it track by track, so you can feel the song evolve as it goes through. And generally what we'll do is I'll take a track that I had recorded that is just basically the melody line with a vocal and then the changes on a guitar. That
mm-hmm.
was just base of every song that I'd taken down to Robert. And he would plug that in. I had a limited version of Pro Tools here in a small studio that we have in our house, and I'd take that down on a drive, and he'd plug it into his big system and then really flesh everything all the way out. He would take that song and put it in and to get it into a like key into the rest of the tracks. And I would replay the guitar. And
mm-hmm.
then he would put in the bass. He'd play the drums. Normally then he'd play piano or synthesizer to go over that.
Mm-hmm.
If there are any other things, instruments that we wanted to add, like strings or woodwinds or any other effects or anything like that, we'd added those in. And the last thing that we'd do is put in the vocals. And this is one of the areas that has always been kind of frightening in a way to me because of the fact that you're isolated in this little sound booth. You have a pair of headphones on. There's a microphone with a guard in front of it, in front of you. And you have the lyrics to the song on a little music stand in front of you, and he starts to play the song just, without obviously the lyrics or without the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sing to go along with it. And it's really something. And I know you felt that same way too, because the first time you went into the studio and sang, we had to use all sorts of coercion just to keep you in the booth.
Yeah. But I'm glad you did. I'm glad you and Robert did. And you guys did an amazing job of helping me remember to breathe, smile, and relax enough to have fun.
Exactly. Well, that was the first time that Xander and I had really written together, and we bounced ideas back and forth for all sorts of songs. Together we wrote Shockwave, One Way, Escape Velocity, and Running. And then Xander wrote all by himself, and this I had nothing to do with. I think I wrote a lead line from one of them. Ain't Nothing Better, Land of Dreams, Double Helix, and Paradox. He wrote all by himself. Ideas are everything else. And some of the guitar work is very complex. And got to the point where your brother was listening to it. Dwayne was listening to this. And his jaw was dropping. He couldn't believe that this young man was the source of this amazing guitar playing.
Yeah.
So,
and you wrote Dodging Bullets, Why, Prisoner
I wrote Dodging
Paradise.
Bullets, Why,
yeah.
Prisoner in Paradise, Time and Time Again, which is our song in some ways, and Never Home, Never Gone, which was one of the earlier songs that I had actually started to write in Europe when I was there with Frank at the villa in Saint-Tropez. That's when I wrote that.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised it wasn't on the first album because of that, because whenever I think about it, I always picture it being on the first album, but no, it's on the second one.
Yeah,
and then
first one, I don't know why.
And then in 2014, we joined West Coast Songwriters, which has been an amazing experience, and that was my first time singing live with you. It was in 2014 on my mom's birthday. We sang Imagine and Holiday on Earth, I think. I think it was Holiday on Earth and Imagine, yeah. That was so amazing. And then we became co-managers of West Coast Songwriters. So,
yeah, I also won Best Performance while playing. That was when West Coast Songwriters was at Phoenix in San Rafael, and Phoenix has since gone out of business. So we now play at Yet Wah, which is a Chinese restaurant that has a wonderful venue in the back of the restaurant with a small stage and lights, nice sound system, and private enough yet entreats the people that are eating in the front of the restaurant to come back and listen if they want, that sort of thing. So it's very comfortable.
Yeah, it's fun there. It's fun.
Yeah, it really is. Between the two places, Phoenix was high-tech and wonderful, and they had a camera that sent images, and they recorded all the songs and put them online, and you could listen to them. Anyone in the world could listen to them. I remember sending, I think, at least once some of the links to my cousins in Hungary. I don't think they ever listened to anything from those times, but I remember sending them a link a couple times just to see if they'd be interested. And, yes, in 2015, well, at the end of 2014 or the beginning of 2015, we became co-managers of West Coast Songwriters, the Wersigs, who had been co-managers with Bob Crane and Laura Lee Brown, had decided to go to Los Angeles to pursue their interests down there in music. And so that left an opening, so we stepped in, and that was really wonderful.
It was the end of 2015, actually, around November-ish, something like that,
okay,
in 2015. And we've been doing it ever since. We're still doing it. And
yeah. Well,
you know, we only have 11 minutes left, though, so we have to kind of go on to the next thing.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that one of the most amazing things about this is the fact that West Coast Songwriters is a nonprofit organization that's been in existence, for over 40 years. And it's changing and has changed and so on and so forth. But the thing that is the most important in terms of my perspective is the fact that it keeps me playing every day. It keeps me looking forward to next month, next week. In fact, we have an event tomorrow
night.
This week
on Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah, tomorrow.
So we will be playing a song that Margot wrote called Imagine It.
Imagine It, yeah. Well, I would like to play Free Fall, one of the songs that you wrote most of it. I gave you a couple of ideas here and there, but it's mostly all you. And it is one of my favorite songs. I have so many favorite songs of yours. But I wanted to make sure we have time to play that during the show, and then we can talk some more about the other songs that we're going to have on the new album when we get it done. 3D.
Okay.
D3 3D. I'll get it back.
Well, Free Fall is an interesting song because it was the essence of it came to me through a chord sequence that I had found, and I'm not really sure where it came from, but it was the chorus of the song, and that really spurred on the idea of pulling together a good verse, and I still think that it's a song in progress, but it'll probably be slightly modified, and then we'll be on the third album. But one of the things that's interesting about Free Fall is the fact that it's about that instant when you see the look in someone else's eyes, and a love interest, let's say, for the first time, and it's that almost shocking realization that that person may think that you're as cool as you think they are.
It reminds me of us when we met. But anyway, let's play the song so we don't run out of time to play it.
Here we tell that story, too.
Yeah, okay. Well, no more stories right now. We're going to play Free Fall, and it's 3.5 minutes also. So here we go. Free Fall, the Donators.
Walking straight at me. Is there a gleam in her eye? Can't look away. No matter how hard I try. Free fall. Got my feet.
I love that song, and I forgot to mention that I was singing in the chorus in that, too. So, you know, thank you for all the ways you live your music, Dudley, and thank you for inspiring Xander and me to live our music as well.
That's the biggest payback for me. That's the biggest payback, not only to be able to create music, but to have you guys involved in it. That is just, it just gives me joy to even think about it, so... I mean, and then to experience it is—it's really wonderful. I'm blessed, and I thank the Lord that I had this opportunity and that we've shared all these musical experiences together. It's been fun. It's so cool to get together, and we haven't really done it recently because I haven't been able to play the guitar. But when Xander's usually up here, we usually get out least a couple guitars and just start going through all the songs that we played together over the years. And it's a wonderful thing to sing and play together.
Yeah, and there's also some pictures in the slideshow of you and Xander playing your guitars on Maui, and that was always really fun, too.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a kick. Go out after dinner and sit on the lawn near the ocean and try and stay away from the rest of the groups of people that were gathered there.
Yeah.
And find a little private spot and then just play and play and play. And then people would come up and they're trying to give me money. I mean,
you can't do that at the hotel.
The one guy gave me a $20 bill, I remember one time, and I'm like, holy shit. Must have liked the music, though.
Yeah. We've only got 3.5 minutes left. So what else do you want to tell us about the songs that are going to be on 3D?
D3 3D. The new songs that we're putting on the new album are two of the songs that you had written. One is Believe, and the other is Imagine It. And these Believe and or no, Imagine It, I think it was. You had written a poem and submitted it to a lot of your constituents and people
Not
that you knew.
Not constituents. Anyway.
Friends
we don't have
family.
Time to go into details about the songs themselves, so just
well,
tell
keep,
us.
You're wasting time by just saying that.
Okay.
In any case, you wrote a beautiful poem that was acknowledged by a number of people, and I turned it into a song called Imagine It.
Mm-hmm.
Believe is a similar story. You wrote the lyrics. I suggested a few changes, wrote a chorus, and came up with that.
Yeah.
Equinox is an instrumental song that I wrote that hasn't been recorded yet. I think it cursorily recorded somewhere, but not in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make sure I can still play the guitar well enough to make sure I can get those tracks down, but that's a beautiful song. Smile is a song we wrote together, and I enjoy playing that to the nth degree.
And singing, it's fun, yeah.
Yeah, and Free Fall you just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Angels in the Sun was a song that we wrote for our moms. You'd always called your mom an angel in the sun, and I started thinking of my mom in the same manner, and the people that I've lost as sun rays and warmth from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out to be a beautiful song, and it's in kind of a jig. It's not the same kind of a rhythm that I would normally use, or certainly not rock and roll. But that's a wonderful song. In the Moment is a song about living in the moment. And then we wrote Penguins, Prisoner in Paradise originally, and then we went back to the Hyatt and played Prisoner in Paradise for the people at the Regency Club and some of the other people there, and they loved it because it mentions the Hyatt Maui in the last verse. And then we thought, well, instead of Prisoner in Paradise, we could make it Penguins in Paradise because there are tropical penguins at the Hyatt.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've got a new version called Penguins in Paradise, which we will include on the third
album.
That's
really fun.
And then there's a song called New Dog, which is
in the works.
Kind of a comparison of the old mm-hmm. and the new styles of living with younger and older people and the in-between, all the aspects that go between the generations and how they interact and so on and so forth. Then there's Sleigh Ride in the Sky, which we just had finished
recorded.
Not too long ago
yeah.
and recorded at Soundtech. And that's a fantasy version of a Christmas song. And then Merry Christmas, and then soon to be a song that you wrote called Live Your Music, which is in process at this point in time.
Yeah.
So
well,
we've got the album. We just have to refine it. I have to find a time to play a couple of the songs, get them down, and then take the rest down to Robert and have those recorded and then mastered. And we'll have D3 3D.
Yeah, and we are out of time. So... this has been fun. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being on the show and going over your musical journey.
It's been fun to share it with the two of you as well. I love you very much.
Love you too. Bye for now, Dudley. Bye for now, everyone listening. And please share this show with your family and friends. Bye.
Bye-bye.